From our studios in New York City and Miami, Florida, you are listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto.
All right, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Striking Corner podcast. And once again, I am joined with my good friend, Vinny Scotto. What's going on, man?
What is up, man?
Chilling, man. You know what's going on. You know I'm not feeling well today.
What?
You know I'm not feeling well today.
Oh, you were drinking last night?
Well, no, not that. We were just talking about it. How I accidentally shaved off my beard.
And, nobody cares about that.
Yeah, I look stupid now, as opposed to I guess normally. I don't know, but yeah. yeah. So I look like a child, and it really bothers me.
That's fine.
Yeah. Anyway,
my story's worse.
Yeah.
I went to Atlantic City last night and got ripped a new asshole on the blackjack table.
Well, this is funny because when you texted me, you said you had won some money.
No, that's not what I said.
Unless
I was drinking also.
Oh, man.
I don't think that's what I said, though.
I think it said something, $1,000. So I was like, I think Vinny won $1,000. That's what I told my wife.
Oh, no. I didn't say anything. I left a few words out of the sentence, which is why you were, I just looked at it.
You were like, blackjack, $1,000 table.
Yeah, I forgot the lost part.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a good night for me. But anyway.
Yeah, so I guess Vinny and I were regressing to our childlike selves. Vinny was at the casino in Atlantic City, and I was at a club called America's Backyard, which is basically full of 20-year-old kids.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Dude, it was bad. Yeah. It was just, I can get in for free because the station that I work for does like a live broadcast. So one of the DJs was like, yeah, I'll get you in. And we were there. It was the first time I had been, Carolina and I had been without the kids for an evening. So we were like, you know, let's go out, let's drink, let's, you know, get something to eat. And then, you know, I was like, you know what? I can get into this place. And that was just, yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad, but the funny thing is you realize today, and I don't want to sound old, but I feel like, I mean, it's not that. I mean, I think this is common knowledge. The music people are listening to nowadays is absolutely fucking terrible, man.
It sucks.
Yeah. So like they played, so they were playing.
That probably is a very old statement though, because I'm sure when we were like 21, 22, like the people who are our age now, like 35, were like, the music today sucks.
Yeah, that's true. But they were playing
the music now really does suck.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, you know, they were playing old school hip hop, you know, and not even old school. Some of them, like, you know, like Juveniles Back That Ass Up, you know, which was like kind of like what was going on when we were maybe in college, I would say, right? Or around that time. And like the kids, these guys, they put it on and like, I would say only like half the place knew what the fuck that song was. And I'm like, wow, you know.
You were the old guy.
Yeah, man. And then like
people were looking at you last night like, what is he doing here?
Yeah. And then there was like
a wheelchair somewhere.
They put on like Travis Scott or some fucking mumble rappers and shit. And then people just, so these kids started going wild. And I was like, oh God, this is fucking terrible. You know, this is just terrible, man. But whatever. Anyway, welcome to the Striking Corner podcast. Another fine episode of this amazing podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by actually a really good friend of ours, Ace of 10 Pals, Florida Kickboxing Academy, 7655 Enterprise Drive, Suite Number 6, Rivera Beach, Florida, 33404. The owner, Ace of 10 Pals, Marek Dadas, Jason Somchai. They have Muay Thai for kids, and for adults. And there's also, hold on, there's quite a few people here that are on this list. Muay Thai Kids is taught by Asa Tenpao, Joe Mueller, Tyler Matsukas, and Jiu-Jitsu coach for adults and kids is Michael Spalholtz. And that is, once again, at Florida Kickboxing Academy here in Rivera Beach, Florida. They are our neighbors to the north, which is basically near West Palm Beach. You guys all know Asa Tenpao, very, very talented athlete, and he's running a great gym at FKA, Florida Kickboxing Academy. So shout out to them, and thank you to them for sponsoring this episode. That's about it, man. Today we have actually a very special guest on the show. Not to say all of them aren't special, but you know, this one is especially. It is none other than Marcy Maxwell. She is the vice president of the United States Muay Thai Federation, or USMF, which Vinny, of course, is now the director of New York. He's the big cheese over there. He constantly reminds me of it every day and sends me a message that says, "Eric, just to remind you, I am now the director of New York."
He's such an asshole. No, I don't.
No, he doesn't really.
But I will say that I have accomplished something pretty big so far. I was able to get the New York State Athletic Commission to allow us to host the YDL, the Youth Development League in New York, sanctioned by the USMF, because they're passing it off as an educational event rather than a combat sport. So it will not require a sanctioning body. So we can host it the way it's meant to be hosted.
Yeah,
so I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's great news, you guys. I mean, a lot of people, you've heard Vinny, we've had everybody, Patrick Rivera on here, Michael Chase Corley. Obviously, the future of Muay Thai here in America, at least for America, is in the youth, in order to build them up and compete worldwide and start building it up to a higher level. And these YDL things, this Youth Development League, is really, really a great way to do it. And Vinny's achieved the ability now to put one together in New York without the need of a sanctioning body, as he said. And I know he doesn't have one scheduled soon or anything like that, but we will keep you guys up to date with that. But definitely this is a big step, especially for New York. There's been a lot in California. Patrick Rivera is doing great stuff over there. And now we're going to hopefully have them in New York for all the young up and coming Muay Thai fighters in the tri-state area that want to go and, build up their level. So without further ado, guys, we will be back in just a few minutes with, once again, Marcy Maxwell, vice president of the USMF. And we'll be right back.
The Striking Corner.
And hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Striking Corner podcast. And as we had mentioned at the beginning, we have a very special guest today. It is none other than Marcy Maxwell, who is vice president of the United States Muay Thai Federation. And as you guys know, we've been talking a lot about the United States Muay Thai Federation, its growth, you know, the great things that they're all doing and together to really push Muay Thai forward in America, but also to bring up the level for us to compete on an international level. So without further ado, hello, Marcy, how are you doing? It's great to have you on the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. I don't get to do this stuff very often, so it's a pleasure and it's an honor to be here with you guys.
We're happy to have you, for sure.
For sure. So, you know, Marcy, as we were talking off a little bit off air, you were telling us a little that you got into Muay Thai a little bit later in the game, but you've been very involved. Can you tell us, I know you were saying that Yang Sinan's your guy, you've been working with him for a long time, you started Muay Thai with him. Tell us a little bit about how you got into Muay Thai, how now you're a big part of it and you're doing a lot of things for the growth of Muay Thai. What made you first, notice Muay Thai and fall in love with this sport?
You know, I played sports. I was always an athlete. I started playing soccer from a really young age, and then I found competitive volleyball, which I did for a number of years. And I blew out my knee playing soccer, and I swore I'd never play soccer again. The volleyball, as I was getting older and I wasn't as competitive, all of that jumping was really hard on my joints and my knees. And so I was in search of another sport, another activity, and I really, really gravitated towards. I thought martial art would be a great place to go, and I started kind of researching and figuring out what was available in my community, and I really, really gravitated towards Muay Thai for one reason or another. And I found a gym that was not too far from my work, from my office, and it was called Fairtex, and it was located on Hawthorne in San Francisco. Nice. And I thought about it, but I said, oh man, that's a real gym. I don't know if they're going to want me strolling in there. But my CFO, actually, at the company that I was working at, we were chatting one day, and actually on our way to a strike force, was like kind of like a company event. And I mentioned that I was interested in Muay Thai, and he actually told me I go there. He was training with Ganyao. Okay. And I had no idea. So he encouraged me, actually bought me my first set of gloves, some pink Gore-Tex gloves. Nice. And that's really how I got started. They gave me as a Christmas gift, they gave me a membership. I fell in love with it. Despite, you know, all the hazing from Jonganan, I fell in love with it. And I started training like six days a week. It became a really big part of my life.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So, I mean, I guess, you know, the one thing is, you know, what was it about, you said you were interested in Muay Thai, but what was it about, you know, how did you, when you saw it, what was the first thing that kind of caught your attention?
Well, the first thing is usually, you know, that you look at is that it's, you know, it's pretty brutal. I like full contact sports, so I think that's what I was kind of gravitating towards. But when you the more you watch it and you learn about it and you understand it, it's not brutal. It becomes this really sort of beautiful art, and almost like a dance when people are competing. So when you're able to look at it through that lens, and it becomes a true art form and something really beautiful and very special.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. And I'm glad you say it, because I think it's one of the things that always sort of with combat sports in general, but especially with Muay Thai and now, you know, with MMA and everything, people look at it through the lens of it being, especially brutal, and Muay Thai has so much tradition and the spirituality and philosophy, right, and things behind it, that really people only see the surface of it, and there's so much below the surface where, you know, as sort of a side note, my mother-in-law, sometimes I'm watching fights and she's looking at it and she'll just like sort of scoff and go, like when there's a knockout or somebody gets cut with an elbow, she's like, she's like, aha, so that's art. And I'm like, you know, and I get where she's coming from, but at the same time, I'm also like, yeah, it's, you know, you just don't get it, you know, once you realize, for me, it was Thailand, going to Thailand and just seeing how invested people are in it and how really important it is to them, and how they, you know, how it is a huge part of their culture. You realize, you know, I feel like, you realize you're part of something really cool. You know, it's a really, yeah, like a really great community. So yeah, so it's cool that you got into that.
It's hard to realize it if you're not in it.
Yeah.
Like if you're in the outside looking in, it's hard to really understand what it's all about and see the beauty, especially if it's a fight where there's cuts and there's blood all over the place. Like it's hard.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. But there, I mean, what other sports do they have, like a white crew? Do they have so much of that tradition during competition?
Yeah.
It really isn't.
No, and it's not only that, it's like the camaraderie of it and especially the, you know, that, and I kind of, you know, like going back to what I was saying with my mother-in-law, like she would see it and I say, yeah, wait until the fight's over. And then she would see them like hugging and like laughing. And, you know, I'm like, that's what it's about. Like there's no animosity isn't there, you know? So, it's in, you know, that old saying that, you know, a lot of Muay Thai fighters talk about, which is, you know, gentlemen outside the ring, you know, warriors inside it, that kind of thing. You know, that's something that's really great about Muay Thai. And I kind of want to, using that, you know, that saying, I want to go into, so you were saying that you started something about 12 something odd years ago, in Muay Thai. Now, how was, and we're going to obviously talk about, we want to talk about women's Muay Thai and its growth right now and how well it's doing. We have a lot of really talented women in the sport. So when you stepped in, you were saying, you know, there was hazing and everything from Jong Sanan. How was it for you, you know, 12 years ago? Obviously, it might seem like it was just 12 years ago, but it's still a lifetime, you know, in a lot of ways of how, you know, we've seen the growth of women in sport. Especially in combat sports, I would say 12 years ago was a long time ago. How was it for you when you first stepped in? Was it still very much a boys' club? You know, was there a lot of women that were involved?
Very few women. If I talk about just the, you know, my exposure to it initially at the gym, there were very few women, and it was a little bit of a boys club, but it was very sort of intimidating. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't at that time even a bridge to cross to get from, you know, doing pad work to sparring or fighting. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit tougher, I would say. I joke with a lot of the Thai trainers, you know, like Jong Sanan and Gan Yao, that those guys have gotten a little bit soft in time. But yeah. I think what happened to them as being here is they've had to shift the mindset. You know, they're applying all of the teaching techniques and approaches that they were exposed to when they were fighters and they were back in Thailand. But then you come to the U.S. and people don't. They don't have to fight to make a living. Like we're fighting for fun, which seems kind of crazy to them. So it was definitely a lot different, you know, and if we talk about, you know, my experience as a female athlete, my entire experience, you know, like when I was in high school, we'd have, the sports that were offered to female athletes when I was in school. So sometime after the invention of the wheel and electricity. But I, you know, if we wanted to have a team, and if there wasn't a female team, we were really encouraged to play volleyball and do tennis and swimming and things like that. So if we wanted to do something that was considered a little more aggressive, like soccer, you know, we'd have to get a team together, or we'd have to convince the school that we could do it. We'd have to find somebody to volunteer to coach us because there was no budget. If we needed uniforms, I think one year we got the football team got new uniforms. So we had their football jerseys that we got to wear for our uniforms. Uh-huh. So there was never any budgets. There weren't a lot of resources, and there weren't a lot of opportunity. So that was in the 80s. And, you know, we talk about Muay Thai, that in 2018, we've had at IFMA, at the World Championships, we hit a milestone where I think it was 48% of the A-class athletes were female. Mm-hmm. And 16 years prior, in 2002, was when the first female athletes, there were only 12. But the first female athletes competed at IFMA. So in 16 years, it's grown, and we've come a long way, and it's a tremendous accomplishment, a lot of which has to do with the IFMA really focusing on, you know, setting up athletes commissions and female commissions, and really trying to get the recognition and the attention, and also support and encourage women to participate, to increase the overall participation.
So in terms of, you know, the Olympics and all that, the IOC, they want to see almost like a 50-50 men to women, right, in a sport? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So there was 48 there, last year, you said, right?
Yeah, 48 last year in the A class, not counting the B class. So it's not the 50% of the total athletes. The B class is, as you know, something that's
disappearing.
Is disappearing. Yeah, kind of. It kind of was implemented for the developing countries to kind of give them a kind of way into the competition where they're not all of a sudden going up against, you know, Superbon.
Yeah.
Twitter or any of those guys. So they're probably going to phase it out. What they did this year is they've they have an age limit, so it's 23 and under to participate in men's B class.
It's going to be a little bit of a longer road for us now, but we'll get there eventually.
Right, that's the important focus on the youth.
Yep.
It's going to take us a little bit of time to get there, but we're putting in the work now and really focusing on the youth to bridge that experience gap, that very large experience gap that we have in international competitions.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of the youth, I mean, we always talk about it on the show. We've had, Patrick on the show a bunch of times the YDL that he put together is just, that's going to be a key factor in that.
Oh man. I think he's got something like, there's probably well over 500 athletes, that are registered YDL athletes today.
I think it was eight now, I thought.
Yeah, it's something crazy. I know it's much higher than 500. 500 is kind of a safe number, but it's a lot. And then some of the registrations didn't go through the system in the way that we needed them to. But okay. Yes, it's up there. It's pretty up there. And that's, we probably only had 20 events. Well, there's a lot, 20 events in the last 2 years, and it's grown like wildfire, as they say.
And we got the YDL Nationals at TBA this year.
Yeah, so I asked Crew Pat, and I was like, hey, what's coming up the pipes? And he gave me a long list of, so he was saying Dallas, Chicago, Delaware, Honolulu, Vacaville, the YDL Nationals at TBAs, New York City, Utah, Los Angeles, San Antonio, some more in the Bay Area. I think he's talking to the WKA champ, to maybe do one at the championships, maybe an East Coast deal. So a lot. And this program, this initiative is becoming, it's separate from the USMF, Crew Patrick's brainchild. But it's going to generate a lot of money for the federation so that we can continue our work and pay the bills and keep the lights on. But also a lot more support for the athletes and being able to maybe provide some more assistance financially in that area.
Yeah, and it's also like it gives from all the way starting at 5 years old, like a stepping stone, like a direction of where to go in this sport rather than just, take this fight and, hopefully it doesn't.
Hopefully nothing bad happens.
Yeah.
It's creating a very safe place, and it's really true development because the kids are getting feedback on various elements of how they're competing and their performance from balance and aggression. And so they're getting actual feedback, and so they're really truly able to develop from it. And we see that in some cases in other member countries that have been inspired by the program.
And
in some cases completely plagiarized, but where
imitation is the sincerest form of flattery,
it is. I was just gonna say that. But we're also starting to see that where in certain locations where they already have like similar, not quite that similar, but kids programs where kids are competing, that we're starting to see that influence from this YDL program. And so it's having some positive influence on existing programs, and we're probably going to see a lot more of that imitation. People are coming out, and imitation is a strong word, but people coming out and doing other types of programs like the YDL. So it's all good stuff. Well, and it all started with Crew Pat and his dream to get this going.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest factors that plays in with the YDL is also that the feedback that these kids are getting is coming directly from USMF trained officials.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's just some karate guy saying, hey, you did that wrong. No, it's coming from a good source, and that, and nobody else can compete with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's based off, you know, Olympic Muay Thai rule sets. So you know, we're all heading towards that type of growth.
I think that's what's that's what is important that I've gathered from all this is definitely, and I, you know, Michael Chase Corley has said it many times to us, and Pat as crew Pat as well, is that, you know, we see it when our athletes go to these international competitions over the years.
Oh, man.
And it's because of, you know, sort of a widespread misunderstanding of rule sets here in America, or just being interpreted differently from commission to commission. So, you know, you have one guy fighting one way, or understanding that Muay Thai is scored one way, let's say in New York or in Florida, as opposed to California or Iowa. And you have all these kind of things. And then when they go to the international competition, to places like IFMA, pretty much everyone that is at IFMA, all the high level countries, have been fighting in IFMA rule sets for their entire lifetime. So they get it. And that's kind of one thing that stuck out to me and stuck out to both Vinny and I remember, was that crew Pat was saying, you know, it wasn't that our fighters were not being able to compete with these guys. It's just that the other guys knew what rules to fight under. They knew how to score. They knew what was scoring. They knew how to play the game. Exactly. They knew that it was a chess match and that the points were scored in a certain way rather than, you know, trying to go out and be aggressive when they're aggressive in the wrong sense of the word without scoring. And now we're starting to see from the ground up with this YDL is that all these kids are really learning what they need to learn to get to international competition. And the proof, as they say, is in the pudding. Cause when we had that, you know, we keep on harping on that team that went recently to the youth world championships and just came back and just wrecked everybody. You know, came back with 16 medals, you know, and also, you know, going back to the whole, with the whole idea of women in Muay Thai, you know, you're seeing girls like Nicole Fernandez, you're seeing, you know, Tierra Brandt, you're seeing obviously Becca Irwin, all of them are just kind of in a lot of ways, sort of the beginning and sort of caught on the tail end of the YDL, but they're really in a big way products of it. Even, and then Patrick has tons of young girls in his group as well that are very talented, and the you know, and the boys that come out of this YDL, and they're all doing, you know, incredibly well. And it's great because it's establishing that talent with the IFMA rule set, so that the next time we go, we're not so much a fish out of water, you know. I think it's gonna be huge.
Yeah, I think, you know, last year was with the youth was rewarding in many ways, but what we all experienced there, and I don't know if anybody's talked about this before, but this sort of shift where they were always looking past USA.
Yeah,
you know, we were kind of like, oh, you know, we're fighting the US. We weren't necessarily considered the weakest, but we also weren't considered the strongest. We weren't a big threat. And we came through there and collected all those medals, and the conversations changed, the way, you know, people interacted with us. You know, we had teams that wanted to come, and, you know, everybody's wanted to take pictures with their kids. And so that was that just being able to experience that and see that and finally, you know, like feel like we're getting there with these kids and we're having this kind of success was really, really emotionally rewarding in the best way.
Definitely. That's awesome.
Yeah. So another thing I wanted that I know that you're involved with is this organization which is called Sport Is Your Gang. And I know you're big. That's a big, you know, big thing that you're involved in. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Sport Is Your Gang is we'll often shorten it to SIYG, and it's a social program that promotes social change through Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the International Federation Initiative, and it's in many different regions and cities throughout the world. It was started in the U.S. through our partnership with the Mexican Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have thousands, I think thousands of kids in their program. And we really had a focus on getting it started in Los Angeles. There were some connections through the city of Los Angeles. So we were able to create some partnerships with programs like GRID, which is gang reduction youth development. Mm-hmm. So that was a good alignment for us. And you know, we started it with David Huerta at his gym mm-hmm. in Los Angeles Muay Thai in East LA. Mm-hmm. He's also a former USMF athlete. Mm-hmm. And it was like great timing. He opened his gym. He really wanted to give back to the community. He's in the community that we serve, that we want to serve and have focus of really reaching out to the at-risk youth. And then he's got probably like 30 to 50 kids in that program. He gives them Muay Thai for free. They come to his gym. They get to train a couple of days a week. And I talked to a lot of those parents, and they've experienced, you know, everything from behavioral changes to improvements in their schoolwork and their attention. So, and their kids are staying out of trouble. They're mm-hmm. a little bit more disciplined. So it's definitely had a very positive impact in that community. We have another school that Lee Garcia is going to be heading up as an instructor, again, through the GRID program and through Soledad Enrichment Action there. And then we're going to be coming, we're heading out to New York City. So Steve Millis is going to be leading that program in the New York area. Mm-hmm. And we have two schools that we're working with, one in the Bronx and one in Brooklyn. And we're going to get those programs. We're bringing Muay Thai to these communities and helping and targeting at-risk youth. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, that's really, to me, is a huge, I think it's really because I'm in Florida and it's, and in Miami, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the Boys and Girls Club and that kind of thing. I think really with, and I know I've seen it with a lot of, communities with boxing as well, obviously, but, I think with Muay Thai, it's really interesting because, like I said, what we talked about before, there's like that really, aside from it just being sport, Muay Thai has that uniqueness about it that it's like we were talking about, it's very spiritual, it's very respectful, there's this whole aspect of art and culture to it that I think really helps resonate with some of the kids and sort of gets them a lot more engaged in a way than just being a sport, you know. And I think that's great. And it's really, absolutely, you know, I think it's really about, I think for a lot of these at-risk youth, it's really, for me, is one of the things I've always noticed is that when you have a lot of youth that have a little bit too much downtime, yeah. you know, that's where they start to get into trouble, or, you know, people that want to get them in trouble or entice them to do things, can get at them, you know, so.
Exactly. I'm one of those youth. Yeah. It is through Muay Thai, but there's also, you know, we went out in 2017, I think, and the Mexican Federation hosted a sort of training. It's called Nonflict, but it's conflict resolution training. Mm-hmm. And it's intention to kind of give the instructors tools in interacting with the kids. And, mm-hmm. and it's giving these kids not only a place to come and train and learn Muay Thai, but it gives them a sense of belonging, right? And it's also becomes like a little family, and they learn how to interact with each other and how to support each other, because you know, they live in that community. These kids are experiencing kind of having the, you know, the same kind of challenges, and it's enabling them to kind of be able to rely on each other. And you know, Muay Thai, it seems like it's an individual sport, but it is a team sport. Yeah. There's never one guy going into the ring by himself. There's a team and a community and a gym, a family, There's all these people behind them, but they don't get there on their own. And it comes from that Muay Thai community that people are able to succeed.
Mm, yeah, definitely. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I was actually kind of like working on something similar, like local here, because Staten Island, from what I understand, I'm in Staten Island, New York, but it's one of the most affected boroughs with like heroin addiction. So I was kind of working on, which the idea I had was a program called Muay Thai is My Drug. Oh. And I
are you stealing Sport is My Gang and Muay Thai is My Drug?
No, because I didn't really know much like about it. Sport is Your Gang, but it was just something that I was trying to do locally here, you know? And I reached out to like a recovery agency where I was going to just kind of open the doors to just anyone in recovery. But I mean, now that you're bringing Sport as Your Gang to New York, maybe, you know, I can work also. I'm definitely open to that.
Yeah. Let's definitely talk about that. I mean, we're all about helping communities and giving back and you know, there's just so much to be done and you know, you think you're going and you're volunteering your time to help these kids, but it really is the instructors who I think benefit the most. It's the people who really are involved in the giving and the helping these kids that really benefit the most from these programs.
Yeah. It's 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, Vinny's, your gym is kind of pretty much smack dab, like kind of on the line between, it's kind of like a working class area and sort of an up and coming area, right?
So yeah. It's kind of an up and coming area. Yeah. I mean, I'm not on Staten Island long, maybe only about like 9 years or so, but I don't think there's there is some issues. Obviously there's different neighborhoods, lower class, upper class, whatever, but I don't see a big issue with, not to say that it wouldn't be a thing, but with gangs, like as much as there would be in say California or even like in the Bronx, or I don't see that as much, but it could just be because I didn't grow up here, so I don't really know. Yeah. Like I grew up in Brooklyn where, there was a lot of different gangs. So, but who knows? Regardless of whether it's gang related or not, you could still help youth in neighborhoods. So that's right. What it's all about.
Using this tool, this, you know, of Muay Thai, which is something you're passionate about and you love. And, you know, funny story, when I first started going to Fairtex, I was actually, you know, splitting my time between, you know, I'd come into the gym and Jonks and I would say, where were you? And I'd say, oh, you know, Taco Tuesday and Wine Wednesday and Thursday, you know, I was going out and being social all the time. And he said something simple to me, you know, very casual, just kind of, you know, in passing, but he said, you know, you have to love Muay Thai more than you love going out, than you love doing these other things.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking about it. It kind of like it stuck in my head and I thought about it and I just kept thinking, God, if you want to be good at anything, you have to make it a priority. You have to love it more than these other distractions that are going on in your life. And Muay Thai did, you know, I didn't, you know, I wasn't necessarily struggling in my life in that moment or was something that I thought I needed, but I found it and it has had a really positive impact. It was life changing. And that's my bond with Jongsan is so strong and the impact that he's had on a lot of people. I mean, couldn't tell you how many people have a Jongsan tattoo on them.
Wow.
For that, but it can be life changing, you know, that we just need to get it out there and expose people to it and hope they fall in love with it.
I think though that we've all kind of had a similar experience, maybe not exact, but in the sense that Muay Thai has all like changed all of our lives in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why like everyone is, we're all so passionate and we want to grow it so much is because of the benefits that it's given us. We just
want to
pass that on. Yeah.
Someone else. We kind of didn't continue that. I remember when Vinny had put a call out there, which was like, we wanted to bring on people that had like an interesting story to tell Which was like kind of tell us, you know, because we, you know, a lot of times with podcast guests, you know, you want to have people, obviously people that are involved in the sport, such as yourself, people that are coaches or promoters or in this case, part of the USMF or fighters themselves. But there are a lot of people who could just be, you know, we've had even amateur fighters who are sort of everyday people that have just, you know, talked about how it's changed their life. And I remember we kind of put the call out there, like, write us an essay, and not an essay, but kind of like give us a little bit of an idea of how Muay Thai sort of changed you. And I think that's something we should definitely continue. But I remember if there's one thing, you know, that I kind of wanted to, you know, piggyback off what you guys were saying from sport is your gang. And then also, you know, how Jong Sinan said, you got to love Muay Thai more. I think the one thing that we've seen a lot with all the fighters we've had that we've interviewed on this show, I think one of the things is the ones that we've noticed are like the ones that are like totally killing it. Not to say all of them aren't, but the ones that you see that are just really special, I would say, in a way, and it always catches me off guard, is because there's a sort of tunnel vision in them. There's this sort of like way of them speaking, of describing things, where it seems like there's really nothing else in their life besides training. You know, I think one of them that caught me the most, that I think was one of my favorite interviews, but I just could feel his energy, was Victor Saravia. Victor Saravia just had this sort of very no-nonsense, just 100%, you know, just focused on Muay Thai. There wasn't really, it was almost like he was a very quiet killer in that sense, but it was very, it was very interesting to see that, you know, and I get it a little from Ong Yin, who's definitely a very great fighter, but he's, if you look at Ong Yin, he's very passionate in everything he does. Like, he's like, I want to be 100%, because he's a great designer. So I want to be 100% in the design work that I do, but I want to be also 100% involved in Muay Thai. Like, those are the two things that he's for him. And he says, like, I have to do both of them, one, you know, with full on passion, you know?
Yeah.
And you notice it. You notice it in the, you know, in their way of fighting. And those are the guys that end up being really, you know, really, really successful when they have that.
And there's something, and it's escaping me, but it's like in spirituality that it's like whatever it is that you do, that you do it very passionately. So if it's, you know, sweeping the floor, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever that act is, that it is very spiritual to engage in it in that way. And and I try and think about that. I don't apply that to everything, but I have that in my mind, and it is something that I think that you're sort of probably born with, that type of sort of focus and dedication.
Yeah, I definitely don't have that. I definitely don't have that. I've learned that a lot recently.
I can agree with that. Eric doesn't have it.
I've learned that recently. I've said so many times I'm going to get back in shape and get back into the gym and do all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some hazing from
Matt Lucas. Matt Lucas. Yeah.
Matt Lucas.
He hazes me all the time.
Always in Thailand.
Yeah. So, grief. Yeah.
He's very disappointed in Eric. Very disappointed.
Yeah.
Eric put this really long, like, was it for New Year's? What are we, 5 months into the year now? But anyway, for New Year's.
Yeah.
This very long, heartfelt, I miss Muay Thai, and I don't want to be fat anymore. This whole long post about how he was going to change his life. So Matt wanted to hold him. Well, he posted it on Facebook so he can be held accountable.
And then Matt held me accountable.
Matt Lucas.
More than anybody.
I'm going to hold you accountable. And he did.
Yeah.
And Eric still just disappointed him.
How's it going so far?
Terrible. And I don't want to make excuses, because I mean, I have, like I said, I have my day job and everything, and I say, that's it. But you just, you know, and that's what I was kind of going to go back to. I think it's to me, it's very honorable, or not honorable. I would say it's very, it blows my mind. Like you were saying with these athletes, that a lot of these athletes that are born with it, you say, you know, like, especially with our society nowadays, how easy it is to get distracted, how easy it is to fall into, you know, so many different things, whether it's, you know, your phone and, you know, like, you know, technology with your iPhone, your iPad and your smart TVs, and you're being attacked from every which angle with entertainment and things to get you not focused on what you want to do. And, you know, I certainly can't fight it, but there are other people, who can really do it. And I love having them on, and they inspire me for, you know, for a couple of minutes.
30
and
then seconds.
They inspire me. Yeah. They inspire me up until I realize, until I go downstairs and, you know, I see a commercial for pizza, you know. Yeah.
Or you get out of your chair and your back hurts. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, struggling to do simple things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you.
So I live vicariously through them now. That's what I do. Yeah. And so besides all that, I mean, I want to talk to you a little bit about USMF because I know we've talked a lot about YDL. We've talked about, you know, Sportage Your Gang. Obviously, USMF as a whole, right now we have, you know, you are the vice president, because I didn't really know so much about how you got into the sport and everything you've been doing for a long time with the sport. So talk to me a little bit about what's going on right now with the USMF. Obviously, I bother Vinny now because he's the director of New York. But yeah, talk to me a little bit about some of the things going on currently with the USMF and, you know, your plans, the plans right now. I know the adult world championships are coming up soon. Is it June or July that you guys are going out there?
July.
End of July.
Yeah.
End of July. So mid-July, we should be heading out there with the team. And, you know, as we kind of alluded to earlier, so we're doing the team selection now, which is always a topic of discussion
and controversy
controversy, yeah.
Which I really, you know, I have to say, I really this is something I have to say, because I read a lot of stuff online, and, you know, I go into these, you know, not forums, I would say threads, where people, you know, and then it kind of bothers me in a way, because I mean, here we have this podcast, and we try to stay neutral. Obviously we do have I wouldn't say a favoritism, but we definitely, since we know a lot of people that are in the USMF, you know, we definitely see things, you got what people are doing, you guys are doing as good. And what I think is sort of lost on some people is I think sometimes, and I was telling Vinny, I think there's a lot of people that are, how would I say it without, I'm not going to say it nicely, but some people are just delusional. I mean, I just think, I think what it is. And I think what we have is a lot of that, where some people think they're better than they are, or there's an entitlement that I should be on it because I've done this and this and this. And then there's a lot of yelling and screaming of like, why wasn't I chosen, or why wasn't, and then some coaches get involved and all this type of stuff. And I'm like, I really wish people would see it for, you know, obviously it's, the way it was before, especially, listen, a long time ago, I tried to get on the USMF team many, many years ago, when it was still very, very almost like a secretive organization. You know, like you really only could, you could only talk to certain people, you know, you talked to certain people and you were trying to get in, but it was very isolated to the West Coast, you know?
Yeah.
And
I think we've been.
Yes.
We've still kind of have a little bit of that stigma from
yeah, but I think time. Yeah, exactly, and I think it's kind of unfair because what I've seen is how fair it's really been in the selection process, in the sense that I've been on some of the emails and then some of the how would I say the group texts and things about selection, and you're really seeing that a lot of the people, and I'm not going to mention names, but a lot of the people that include, yeah, you know, Marcy, and include a lot of really talented coaches in the United States from all regions. Mm-hmm. You know, when names are thrown into the hat of like, hey, should we take this person? Da da da. There's a lot of discussion going on of why they should be going, who they've defeated recently, who's they've beaten, where they've competed, how active they've been. It's never been like, oh, it's because it's a friend of a friend. And I think that's kind of where stigma still is, you know? And I just hate seeing it where people don't realize, like, it's not going to be absolutely perfect, and you're not always going to be selected, because you got to realize there's a lot of great athletes now, you know? And I think people need to stop, you know, just there's got to be a stoppage of the bickering, you know?
Part of the issue is that I feel, mm-hmm. Some people feel that they deserve to be there, but they also don't realize that it's not, you know, it IFMA is different than the way that they fight here. It's a different rule set. So if you, yeah, you could be winning here, that's all fine and dandy, but your style may not match up well according to the style of IFMA. And the coaches, the team of coaches that we have know what style is going to win over there. So if you don't get selected, yeah, you could have won this tournament and that tournament, big deal. It doesn't mean that you're going to win at IFMA. So if you don't get selected, it's because the coaches of Team USA who know what they're doing don't think that you'll do it. And if you want to go there, if you think you should go there, then maybe you should learn the rules better and fight that style. And then maybe you'll get selected.
It's we're trying to generate more opportunities for international competition. So, you know, whether it's with our neighbors, Mexico and Canada, through the Pan American Confederation, that, you know, so people aren't getting their first entry into this at IFMA, where you could step into the ring and be and being about with, you know, one of your heroes or somebody looking up to that's got 200 fights, but a way to kind of, you know, get people a little more international experience, whether they're on that path or not. And we want to get all the medals that we can. We don't really care what state, what region, you know, who they're from. We want to get medals. We want to have the best team, but we have a duty to in the selection process of making sure that people are qualified. So you might have a lot of fights, but who are you fighting? You know, what tournaments did you win? And your fight style. Our coaches are, you know, looking at these fighters when we're in tournaments. We're looking at videos of people. We're watching a lot of fights, and somebody might see something, a style that might work. Somebody who's really, really talented that might be good for it. We keep, you know, a little list of those folks. But we also have a duty around safety and protecting people. Yeah. And we don't want to put somebody in a situation where they can be injured, they can be outclassed and they can get injured, or they're outclassed and they feel defeated. And they come in feeling really great about themselves and they leave feeling completely defeated, and that can have a negative impact on somebody's career.
Yeah. They get somebody's career and the rest of the team that's there.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's one thing too. I mean, you gotta. It's almost like, you know, we're now reaching. Everyone's talking about this whole idea of Muay Thai in the Olympics and all this type of stuff. And you gotta remember, I mean, when these Olympic committees, when they're selecting people, they're not selecting just because you happen to be up. Let's say, like, if we're talking about swimming, you know, just because you're a pretty good swimmer doesn't mean you're gonna get, you know, on the U.S. swim team. You know,
that's a great analogy.
Exactly. It's just that's just the way it is. And I think what the problem is with fighting is it's so different because I don't know, since fighting is so much ego. There's so much ego, and by nature, everyone thinks they can fuck. Well, I don't want to curse, but anyway, although we usually do, but everybody thinks they can fight. You know. And by nature, we always think we can. And so they'll see these guys and they'll see. And if one of, God forbid, one of our fighters loses, they're like, I could have done way better, you know. Yeah. And you probably wouldn't have, you know, because, you know, there's the guys that they're fighting. Some of these guys from Turkey and the Ukraine and Belarus have 200 and 300 fights under their belt. And still we have talented fighters that really give them a run for their money or beat them, you know. So. And that's all due to the selection process. So it's like, yeah, just because, and that's the problem too, that we have, unfortunately, that we've discussed here in on the podcast too, we have a lot of these, you know, belts being given out for absolutely no reason. You know, somebody who's an amateur fighter has had 5 wins and all of a sudden he's getting a title belt in some organization, and it gives them the sense that they do have this ability. And and they, it gives them an ego too. So in order, and so when they're shot down, they sort of take it as, you know, it's something you are holding against them. And it's like, no, we just want to make sure that we have the absolute best team to win, you know, to win medals, because we don't want to go there. I mean, it's just like I said, go back to the Olympics. You know, no one's trying to pick the guys that are pretty good at it. They want to go win. You know, they need to go win medals. Exactly. You know, So
exactly. Mm-hmm. We want the best. You know, we're what's so, you know, kind of refreshing and inspiring is to be at those YDLs and to watch the kids, right? Because they're fearless. They're just going in and doing what they're supposed to do. And there's that ego, you know, sometimes it's there, you know, you get some kids that might express that, but they're just going in for the love of it and the joy of it. And they want to do good and they just want to compete. And it wasn't until going to those YDLs and seeing the youth really compete that they really inspire me. They really, make me, you know, believe in the sport, and they're going to be groomed, I think, in a much different manner than how our adults who started as adults in the sport and, you know, in their late teens and mid 20s or just being introduced to the sport, they're going to have a better, you know, a stronger foundation and less of that, all of that ego and that stuff that we have to pump ourselves up in order to get into the ring.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, you know, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Marcy. You know, we've gotten a lot of great information, and definitely we're honored to have you on the podcast to talk to us a little bit about today, about all the different things that you've been involved in as well. Obviously with the USMF, Sport Is Your Gang, which is a very inspiring and very, very good program, and as well as the YDL. So we appreciate you giving us some time to come on and talk to us about this passion that we all have for Muay Thai.
Yeah, this was so much fun. I really, really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you very, very much. That was great.
Thank you. Glad
to have you on.
Muay Thai คือชีวิต.
All right, everybody. So once again, thank you very much to Marcy Maxwell, USMF Vice President, as you guys heard. Also, Sport Is Your Gang. Definitely check out everything she's doing with that organization. And, of course, the YDL. Great information, great talk with her, really, really great person to have on. So we were really happy to speak with her, and I hope you guys enjoyed listening to what she had to talk about the growth, really, of Muay Thai and what's coming, really, for the YDL and for Sport Is Your Gang and for the USMF that's upcoming soon. The World Championships that will take place in Bangkok in July. So there's really a lot of great stuff going on in the sport of Muay Thai, and she's a big part of it. So shout out to her for her hard work. Vinny, you got anything to add before we head out?
No, we pretty much said everything already.
Awesome. All right, guys. So
follow me on Instagram.
Yeah. So you guys can always catch
us. I did recently finally reach 1,000 followers on Instagram.
Well, you beat me. I'm at 985. It goes to like 990, 95, 95, and then comes down.
I lost some, actually.
Well, because there's a lot of fake people out there.
Yeah. Well, I was at 1,000. Next stop, 10,000.
Yeah. And you guys could be a big part of that. So anyway, so you guys can follow us at strikingcorner.com. That's our main website. That's where you can find our podcast every single episode. If you don't, let's say follow us on Apple Podcasts or all of any of your podcast outlets, Spotify, Google Play Music, we're on all of those. But if you don't have any of those apps, you guys can always listen to us at strikingcorner.com. That's where we have all our episodes. Besides that, our social media, we're most active on Instagram, Eric Rivera_TSC. Also on Twitter, I'm sorry, Striking Corner on Instagram.
Look at you trying to plug that in there.
Yeah. Striking Corner on Instagram, Striking Corner on Twitter, and Striking Corner on Facebook. And as for our personal accounts, as Vinny said, Vinny's at Vinny Scotto. He's trying to get to those 10,000 followers. And mine is Eric Rivera_TSC. So once again, guys, thank you for listening. And as always, please leave a rating or a comment. If you guys follow us on iTunes, it helps us grow in the podcast library that is iTunes. And so we'd really appreciate it. Thank you for your continued support and for listening and helping us grow. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another guest. So we'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto.